1996. This is Kathy Adams. I'm interviewing Mildred T. Nesbitt, born in Birmingham, 1922. This interview will go from 1922 through the civil rights era of the 60s in Birmingham. Ms. Nesbitt, what are some of your earliest childhood memories of life in Birmingham?
Well, I remember my daddy's Model T Ford. That was back in 1926 when I was 4 years old. And in order to get the Model T Ford to run, he had to crank up the car with a hand crank, start it up with a hand crank. And he would always let me go with him once a month to collect rent from a house that he owned. And that to me was always really something that he would want, they would let me go along with him. Now, I remember on Saturday mornings, every Saturday morning when we all, were all little children, we would go to the picture show, which is what they called the movies back in those days. It was like 10 cents a person to get in. They had cowboy movies and cartoons, and the screen was black and white. We didn't have any color to it. And they had, let's say, the cowboys were one of my favorite movies. And then I also remember that we used to go by Sloss Furnace, and all the skies would be lit up all hours of the night over the whole area of Birmingham almost, when they poured the molten pine from the furnaces. Then there was East Lake Park, which was called the Amusement Park. And they had roller coasters. They had tunnels with love, boat rides, and they had the merry-go-round and several other rides. And I guess my favorite was the merry-go-round. And I always got the biggest horse on there. And my brother always had to sit in the chair because he was just a little bitty thing, like 2 years old, and he was afraid to get on a horse. And I also would ride the Tunnel of Love boat through the tunnel. And that roller coaster was one thing that I wanted no part of. They had that was built over the lake car. And all I could see was myself falling off of the thing into the water. East Lake Park was a big part of entertainment facilities in Birmingham. Then we had an Avondale Park, which was Birmingham Zoo at that time. And all kinds of animals there, like the bears, elephants, monkeys, and all kinds of animals. And they had these two black grizzly bears in these natural caves that were coming out of, you could come out of the caves from the Red Mountain, and that's where Avondale Park was. And that was really interesting that they had that natural one cave there where the bears could live in the park.
Did they have like a mineral spring or something there too?
I don't know if they did or not. I don't know. But anyway, that was a fun thing to go to also. And we used to go there quite often.
Is that where Miss Fancy was?
Yes, Miss Fancy. And every time any of us kids would see a big fat lady, we'd say, well, there goes Miss Fancy down the street. Let's see, and then I remember having the big China berry trees in our yard, and the big China bear battles we used to have when we would climb up in the trees, and the next door neighbor had one over in their yard, and there was a fence that separated those two big trees, and all of us kids would get up in the tree and pick the China bears, and we'd have a regular battle with them. We'd throw them back at each other, and they'd yell and carry on. It was lots of fun. And the neighbors next door, on one side of us, they had chickens in their backyard. And Mrs. Finley would wring the necks of the chickens in order to kill them and pluck all the feathers out. And then she would take them in the house, take the chickens in the house and fry them. And that was the best fried chicken you've ever tasted. Well, anyway, my mother used to have to buy live chickens at the grocery store. She either had the grocery store man to kill them, or she would bring them home and ask Miss Finley to kill them.
Did she pick out the actual live chicken at the grocery store?
Yes, uh-huh.
Did you ever go with her to pick out the chicken?
Yeah. Well, she tried one day to kill a chicken, and it was the first time she had ever tried that. And she got my daddy's hatchet, and she went out in the backyard, and she chased that poor old chicken all over the backyard before she finally pondered it. And the chicken was petrified, and she went down on it with daddy's hatchet, and she missed the neck and hit the body, and blood splurted everywhere, and the chicken, it twitched all over the yard, and we stood there and watched it until it died. It was a horrible experience, and she never could eat chicken after that. And let's see. And I remember the first funeral I ever went to. It was my mother's Uncle Johnny. He lived out in the country, which now is Huffman. And Uncle Johnny had his casket. At that time they had the funerals, the caskets brought to the home. And I had two cousins with me that day that we went to the funeral, and we were outside of the house trying to decide whether we really wanted to go in or not. None of us really. We were kind of afraid to go in. But we all decided to go on in, and all three of us held hands when we went in. When we got in there, we wouldn't even look at him. And finally we got up enough nerve to look at him, so we walked over to the casket, and we saw this screen over his casket, and we couldn't figure out why they would put a screen on his casket, over his casket.
Like a screen door screen?
It was over the top. The lid of the casket was open, but and you could see him, but he had a screen over that would be between the lid and him lying there in the casket. And we couldn't figure out what that screen, why they had that screen over him. And after a while, I saw my mother, and we asked her why they had that screen over poor old Uncle Billy. And she said, well, that was to keep the flies off of him. And so, let's see now, what else do I have here? Let's see, I remember the good old streetcars we used to ride. We used to ride on those streetcars to town, and it cost 15 cents, and you could ride anywhere on those streetcars from one end of town to the other. And there was a blind man who lived up the street from us, and he rode the streetcar every day to work. And he knew exactly what street to get off in town and what street to get off at out in our section of town where he lived. It was, we never could figure out how he could do that, being blind like he was. But he evidently had been enough to know, someone said, the bumps and the rails and the, I don't know, he knew what streets the streetcar would come to, and he knew exactly what street to get off of, which I always thought was amazing. And then I remember the kind of refrigeration that we had back in those days, and which were wooden ice boxes. And we had an ice man who used to come to our house every day in this wagon with all the ice on it, and he would chip off a big block and take in to each one homes that had the ice boxes, is what they called them. They were wooden, and they were lined with metal, some kind of metal, which kept it insulated. And he would chip off some ice for us and let us eat it, and he even let us kids ride on the back end of his wagon up the street away. And it was an old wagon that was
during the days that the Iceman came, were the streets paved or were they dirt?
No, they were dirt roads. They were dirt roads.
That inside the city of Birmingham, the roads are still dirt.
Right. Yeah. Well, they had a few paved streets in the downtown section, but very few. But they had all of it. They had so many wires on the streets, power lines and so forth.
For the streetcars.
Where they don't, they're no more. They don't have those anymore.
What were some of the social events that you participated in or attended while you were growing up in Birmingham?
Well, in the Methodist Church, before we were allowed to date, we all went to league services on Sunday night. And afterwards, we would go to someone's home for refreshments. We would go on picnics to Death Valley. And we would have a Winnie roast there. And other times, we would have watermelon cutting parties at Turkey Creek. That water was so cool that we would put the watermelons in the creek to keep them cool. And that was the best watermelon that we ever had, was when we'd go on those watermelon cuttings to Turkey Creek. And
were they with church social?
Oh, yeah. Most of them were, yeah. But some of them were just with, like, neighbors and school, some of my school buddies in Sunday school classes and so forth. We also had lots of hay rides. And sometimes we could get a wagon drawn by a horse and load it up with hay, and everybody would get up on it with our bandanas and overalls and so forth, and go out somewhere, like to Artesian Wells or somewhere like that, which is where now is where the Eastwood Mall is, and Artesian Wells is still there, but of course they have a drainage facilities there for that.
Where was Death Valley?
Death Valley was about two blocks down from this street that we live in right now. Death Valley, we used to hike over to Death Valley through the woods from my house. And that was kind of scary. We got up to Death Valley one day, and it was started getting dark and cloudy, and all of a sudden, you could just hear the trees and wind roaring, and it sounded real scary. We turned around and ran home just as fast, because they had caves all all around the section, all around here. And we still do have caves. We have some caves up on Claremont Avenue. And then we have some out by Eastwood Mall, across the highway from Eastwood Mall, where the festival shopping center is there. You can see the caves from the street. Yeah. That's the way we were entertained and so forth.
So you would say that the church played a big role in your young life, socially as well as religiously?
I tell you, the church played a very important part in my life because I came to know Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. My grandmother Thompson was a charter member of the church, and my mother and daddy were also members of the same church I joined when I was 12 years old. And we used to go to Shaco Springs to camp, church camp, and it played a big part in my life.
How did the Depression affect you, your family, and friends?
The Depression never bothered us because my daddy had a good job, but my granddaddy lost money in the bank, and I had a few friends whose daddies lost their jobs. We did have a lot of people knocking on our door during that period. They were begging for money and food and clothes. And I remember Mr. Bell, who was president of the First National Bank in Woodlawn. He committed suicide. And everybody that day was standing outside of the bank door trying to get in to get their money, but the door was locked. And some of our neighbors had bought houses, new houses, and had moved into their new houses before this all came about. And they rented out their old houses that they didn't sell. And luckily, the ones that had rented out their houses that lost the houses that they had built, the new houses, they were able to come back to their old houses in the neighborhood. And my daddy had a lot to build a new house. And during the Depression, when those people moved back to the old neighborhood, he decided not to build that house and just wait and see, what was going to take place.
What was going to school like, elementary school and high school?
Well, we always had good, strong teachers, and I loved all of them. Back in my day, everyone respected the teachers and the principals of the school, high schools and grammar schools. There was no talking back or acting smart to them, or you would be punished.
How did they punish them?
Well, most of the time they had a wooden paddle that they used, and usually they would call the parents, I think, before they would punish them. But you knew you were going to be punished, and at that time most all of the parents gave them permission to punish their child if they did misbehave. We also had a prayer every morning in the class. And let's see, I had the same teacher, his name was Mrs. Heaton, that my mother and daddy had when they were in the same grammar school. That's how old the grammar school was. I remember going to the lunchroom, and in the lunchroom they had my favorite sandwich, which was peanut butter and bananas. And it cost our sandwich cost a dime, and we would always get an ice cream sandwich or a Dixie cup of ice cream, which was only a nickel. And we always had to get a glass of milk, because our lunchroom teacher insisted on all of us drinking milk with our food. She was kind of a strict lunchroom teacher, but we all liked her.
What were some of the memorable events or happenings during your high school days?
Well, I don't think I missed a single football game. After the games, or even the dances, we would all go over to Piper's Ice Cream Store in Lakewood, which is down up on Claremont Avenue. And,
that the same area as Lakewood and Lakeview?
Yes. And we would always get these hot fudge sundaes that were so good with the toasted almonds, hot toasted almonds on top of it. And, that was the best dessert I think I ever had.
What about the spinning wheel out in Roebuck?
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. The spinning wheel was really another popular, it was the most popular place, but not for me, because the glasses were so big that they kind of nauseated me just to look at them. I was not a big eater, and there was no way I could drink a whole malted milk or a milkshake at a place, ice cream place. So it wasn't my favorite place, but most everybody liked all that, especially the boys. They liked those huge glasses. I don't know how many ounces of milkshake were in those glasses.
Did you get a souvenir at one time from Grayson's spinning wheel?
Yes. I had a bunch of four friends that thought they were doing something so cute. So one night, they were out at Grayson's, and they were all by themselves, and they were thought they were being real cute, and one of them got his daddy's truck. His daddy was in the furniture business, and he got this truck, and they took that out to Grayson's spinning wheel after it closed, and they picked up one of those huge concrete polar bears they had out there, and how they picked those heavy things up, because they were solid concrete, and how they picked those up, that one polar bear, I mean, and put it on the truck, and they brought that out to my house and set it in our front yard. When we got up the next morning, which was Sunday morning, and my daddy went out there and he saw this white polar bear, he about had a fit. And he called me and said, wanted me to come out there and see what was in the front yard. And I looked at it. Of course, I knew where it came from. And I knew about who brought that and what group brought that and put it in my yard. And so I called them, and the ones that I knew had done that, but they were always doing things like that. And I told them, I said, I know how you got this thing out here. It was on your daddy's furniture truck, and my daddy wants it moved. Well, they couldn't get the furniture truck since that was Sunday. Monday he had to go to school, and it was the end of the week. That polar bear sat out in our front yard in the summertime all summer before they finally got out there to get it. And it took about four boys to pick that up and put it on the truck. Oh, that was really something else. But I remember jitterbugging and dancing at all of the junior and senior proms. We never missed any of those. And they were always held out at Cascade. And, of course, they had this big, well-known chandelier. I guess you would call it a chandelier. It was a globe type.
A ball.
Mm-hmm. and it rotated and went around and around and sparkled the whole dance hall. And that was lots of fun. And my favorite teacher in high school was Mrs. Dorsett, and she was my biology teacher, and I remembered her telling what would happen to our bodies if we ever started smoking, and she was so right. Oh, and I was also a class historian.
What economic class was your family?
A middle class.
Did your neighborhood reflect that? Were most of the people in your neighborhood about the same?
Yes.
What are your memories of Franklin D. Roosevelt's first term in office?
Well, I think everybody thought he was a great president during the first and second term. But after that, when he signed a treaty at the Yalta conference, all of us thought Roosevelt had sold us down the river. And especially when he agreed to let Russia go into Germany first instead of the United States. And Joseph Stalin broke a number of agreements that he had made with Roosevelt and Churchill. I also remember when Roosevelt died at Warm Springs, Georgia. And World War II was still going on at that same time.
How did the New Deal administration affect your family? Did this have any effect on you?
No, the New Deal administration did not affect my family at all.
Do you remember War of the Worlds broadcast on the radio in 1933?
Yes, I remember hearing part of that on the radio. And it scared me to death. I thought that the world was coming to an end. And I ran into the kitchen to tell my mother what was being said on the radio. And by the time she got into the living room, the broadcast was over. She called Daddy at the office to see if he had heard anything about it. And he said, yes, somebody else had called the office, and at the end of the broadcast, they announced that it was not true, but a lot of people panicked when they heard it and didn't hear the finish that it was not true. And so he told us, Mother, not to worry about it, that it was not the real thing, but it certainly had everybody upset that had heard it, and I was 11 years old at that time.
Do you remember the first peacetime draft?
Oh, yes. I remember the Service Act of 1940. When I was a senior in high school, I didn't like it because I knew too many who were going to have to sign up for it, including my brother and boyfriends.
How did World War II affect your family?
Well, my brother was in the Navy, stationed at the Naval Base in Guam. And he was one of the first to go into the invasion of Iwo Jima. And he said they sat out in the ships out from Iwo Jima, trying to get in to take over Iwo Jima. And all of the Japanese suicide pilots were flying their planes all around the naval ships, and they would dive into them and blow them up, and it'd blow, of course, the Japanese pilot up that they were dedicated to give their life for their country, and I don't know how they could do that, but anyway, they did. But the ship that my brother was on was hit, but it was not damaged very much. The the reason they had to sit out in the harbor so long before they could go in was they were waiting for the American planes to come in to knock out those Japanese suicide planes. And when they got there, when the American planes finally got there, then they did, you know, weave them out, mostly out of right in that area there. And so the boats went on in, and the men went in. My brother was in the medic corps, and he was right behind the first ones that, with the merchant marines that went in. So anyway, they took over Iwo Jima, and when they were through, they went back to...